it's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey folks, and welcome back to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and I'm here today excited to be with you as always. I'm sitting here in the Furman Garner Performance Studio here at KUAF, the only public radio station in Northwest Arkansas. So excited to just sit down as just have a conversation with my next guest, somebody that I have been hounding to come on the podcast. And I wasn't sure if it was me or what. I mean, of course, we could blame the pandemic. We could blame a lot of things.
That's
but
right.
I'd like to think that this next guest is just so busy and so out there serving our community that it's just hard finding time. And so that guest is none other than the fabulous Monique Jones. She's a pastor. She's the director of outreach and community engagement at the St. James Food Pantry. And I met her in the community when I first moved here because, you know, the funny thing is, as an African-American, when you come to a place like Northwest Arkansas, you notice all the other African-Americans. You just
That's
do.
That's true.
It's just the way it is. So we connected somewhere, but I think during the pandemic was really when we got to kind of forge a relationship. And Monique was just running that food pantry in an amazing way at a time that was extremely difficult for all of us collectively. And you know, I'll never forget just coming in there every Tuesday with the downtown Fayetteville Rotary Club who would volunteer their time. And I brought my boys down. I brought all three of my boys served multiple days at that food pantry. And it kind of hit home for me between doing that. And I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, between serving the needs that St. James Food Pantry had for the food insecure in Northwest Arkansas and going out with the fabulous Nate Walls and serving food to people and just knocking on doors and bringing meals to them. It really drove home for me, man, you know, this is a real issue.
That's a huge.
And so I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today. Oh. And I just want to welcome you finally to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. And the cool thing is that we can also have a conversation about the fact that you're a transplant because you've been here, like, as you said, 12 years. And so that's a conversation I've been wanting to have because as we're coming up on our 5-year anniversary, we want to celebrate why people come to Northwest Arkansas and why do they decide to make this place home. So Monique Jones, how are you doing?
Randy, thank you for having me today. I know you've been hounding me. I apologize.
Oh, it's all good.
Not trying to avoid you, but it's really going well. It's really going well. I just want to make a correction. I am a minister at St. James.
Okay.
And I'm also the director of outreach at the Squire J. Hagen Center, which is a nonprofit arm of St. James.
Okay.
And
St. James is the oldest African-American
church going on 159 years.
Okay.
1865 is when Squire Jehagan settled St. James as the first African-American church here. And it's still going strong.
Yeah.
It touches me to my core that I'm able to continue his legacy of serving the community. It's ministry is more than what happens in the four walls of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Ministry is community. Ministry is feeding food. Ministry is welcoming individuals in. Ministry is just loving on your neighbors and understanding who is what and where and how you can support them.
Yeah.
Being here for 12 years, I think part of that is why I'm still here 12 years later. I came here on a 2-year contract, worked for 25 years in human resources. My last contract was to relocate a plant from Dallas to Northwest Arkansas, thinking I'm just going to be here for a couple of years. But we ended up staying because, number one, it's a beautiful state. It is beautiful. I mean, being outside, you can ride bikes, go walking, and there's great neighbors.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, I've met and created relationships with neighbors and community that I would not otherwise have worked within any corporate environment.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you know, and that's funny you say that. What was your familiarity with Northwest Arkansas before you came up here to serve that need for your
family? Oh, none.
None whatsoever.
They asked me to relocate, and I asked my husband, and me and him looked at it. We came up here for one weekend on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We were out in Turnmaker. We didn't hardly get to see anybody. We went to the mall. So we did not see one person that looked like us in the whole mall.
Really?
That was concerning. So I started doing my research. I started looking at census data information. Mm-hmm. Started looking around at schools. I have a child with a disability. I started doing some research around how Arkansas supports individuals with disabilities. So I did my research before we moved. Anna was five then and in kindergarten. And now she's at the high school and flourishing.
Yeah.
She's flourishing mostly because of the community we're surrounded with.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I can appreciate that. And sometimes mm-hmm. you really don't know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. I've told the story before. My wife came to visit for a week. And I had come to work with a company that I used to be an owner of. Mm-hmm. And she spent a week kind of walking, going around, visiting the schools. Mm-hmm. She went to the library. She's like, oh, you got to see it. It's the best. I'm like, it's just a library. It's not that big of a deal. And sure enough, she was right. It was something special about it. And lo and behold, we were moving into Northwest Arkansas 3 months later. This was October of 2014. And we moved in December of 2014. So, and we haven't looked back. And now we're celebrating 10 years. So we came in just a couple of years after you and found this place to be home.
And when I relocated here as the HR manager, I also relocated families here. So the plant completely shut down in Dallas. The plant 12 years ago, the Fayetteville American Air Filter plant was the oldest out of all of them. And it was 31 years old back then. And they are also the super center that made fiberglass that went to the other air filtration manufacturing plants across the United States.
Okay.
And so I relocated some of my community from Dallas that were Hispanic, originally from Mexico. It was a couple of blacks and a couple of whites, but we became a family too, knowing each other and supporting each other in that move as well.
Yeah. How many of those folks are still here?
You know, I'm just going to tell you, I know for a fact only three of us are still here.
Are still here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
That's when you're from Mexico and you are used to being in Texas and driving across the border to seeing your family consistently, and you move where it's a 10 to 12 hour drive, you start thinking twice. Like there's a disconnection if you can't find your tribe.
Yeah.
And they searched and searched. And it was difficult to find their tribe here, specifically in Fayetteville, because, you know, I shared with them the census data of how many Hispanics were in the Springdale area, but most of them wanted to stay in Fayetteville, and it's not as many in the Fayetteville area.
Right, yeah. And, you know, and it's funny you mention that, because each city has its own different flavor.
That's right.
When it comes to different minority groups that are here in Northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, like you said, Springdale has its own flavor. Of course, the Marshallese are there. There's a huge Latinx population mm-hmm. there. There's a huge Latinx population in Rogers.
Right.
And then you have Bentonville, and then you have Fayetteville at the bottom. And each community has a different group of folks.
That's right.
That's right.
And if you can't fit in or you can't find your tribe, you think, well, how much longer can I really stay?
Right. Yeah. Well, but the Latinx population is the fastest growing demographic
in
Northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm. So people are finding their tribe.
That's right.
You know, whether you're from Central America, whether you're from Mexico.
That's right.
You know, it's just, I think people are finding people that are like them.
I think there's a sense of intentionality, too. You can't get off work and go inside and get off work and go inside and never talk to your neighbors, go out, mix with the community, go to any community events and then go, I never found my tribe. You're not, you have to get in the mix and see what's going on. That has always been my mantra is, what's happening? Let me go and see what's happening. And if this works for me, is it welcoming for me? Is it safe for me and my family?
Yeah.
And that made a difference in some of those spaces. Can I say 100% of those spaces were safe spaces? No, they were not.
Right.
Being honest.
Yeah. No, I understand that. And, you know, I guess you came here. I always think about it, but I think this is true, you know, for a lot of different groups of people, though. I know when I first moved here, my mom said, well, you got to find a good church. Find a good church when you get there and make sure that you like it. And so how did you find St. James?
Well, I was grateful. My other daughter, Katara, who is known as Amor the Artist, was at Fayetteville High School, and she was in the band with Malcolm Bradley, and he invited her to church.
Okay.
And she was like, I think this is it. And when you know your kids have connected in a faith-based space where they feel safe as well, parents will follow their children.
Yeah.
Parents will support their children in that faith walk when they want to get connected. And it was no looking back after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. And then you found St. James and really found a place for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you decide that, hey, you know, I want to be a part of the food pantry? Because that does that predates you, right?
It does. No, it doesn't. So that was about 6 years ago, working with then my director of operations, Chris Seawood.
Okay.
And him and I sit down and talk, and we had a conversation about some of the movement I had been making and connecting with community, and how if I was already doing it in this space, how I could bring that faith-based space alongside with the movement I was working. And it was more of just creating collaborations, creating partnerships, developing partnerships that had never been creating, and then adding that food pantry piece. It just all seamlessly worked together. But Chris had an eye for it, and he was very supportive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very supportive person.
He is.
I mean,
he is.
I love Chris Seawood. He is the man. And for those of you that don't know, Chris is a part of Theater Squared, and he and I have partnered up on a number of initiatives. I've had him on the podcast as well, and we will link to that because you've been on several podcasts that have originated or been recorded here at KUAF, mm-hmm. including, I think, the R Word mm-hmm. and the Martin Luther King mm-hmm. podcast,
Beloved
mm-hmm. Community podcast. And so there's a lot, you've had a lot of interaction with different groups and organizations here in Northwest Arkansas. So you left your company, and at that point in time, and in your mind, were you like, okay, the next thing I'm going to do is to get involved with community-based activities? How did that kind of mm-hmm. come about? Because that also predates.
That's true.
Predates the St. James Food Pantry.
Yeah. You know, I really had this talk with Jesus, and we were sitting down talking, and I said, it was right before either during the pandemic, and I said, what's next? And clearly I heard, about time you ask me. So just having that free space open to be available to serve was where I was in my life. And in my space of I've done, I've accomplished, I've been my role, even in HR as vice president of human resources. Never wanted to be president, don't need to be CEO. What's next for Monique? And in that, it's your reasonable service left. What I need you to do is serve and serve full time. And I had to also go into a solid place of my foundation is built on my faith.
Okay.
And my faith is that he's my provider, that no man, no job, no 8 to 5 is really my provider. But it also is a faith walk in doing that too, and stepping out and saying, I'm going to leave this corporate with all these benefits and everything else it brings to say, I'm going to go in this faith-based space and know that I know this is going to provide the support I need for me and my family.
Yeah.
It wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be, but I think activating my faith is where I was in that space. I've had faith all these years. Now it's the time to see it really activated.
Yeah. It's a conversation for those that don't recognize, you know, Jesus had a conversation with Peter and he told him to get out of the boat.
Yeah.
And don't look down.
Don't look down.
Just walk and look straight ahead. And
That's right. It
sounds like you had that same conversation.
I had that conversation.
And you got out of the boat and you looked straight ahead.
Look straight ahead and still looking straight ahead and trusting and believing.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. So you took and now it's all becoming clearer because I didn't know about your background and history as an HR executive
mm-hmm.
and your experience, but it all kind of makes sense about how you've brought so much order to providing and serving the needs of the food insecure here in Northwest Arkansas with the St. James Food Pantry. Why don't you talk with us a little bit about the St. James Food Pantry and how I think it's, first of all, I think it's providential that the St. James Food Pantry comes out of the oldest Black church in Northwest Arkansas. You know, when you look at that, the optics of it are like, wow, okay,
mm-hmm.
I understand. I see, you know, and so sometimes when people say, well, you know, God has a really strange sense of humor in how
he
does things, but he's using the oldest Black church in mm-hmm. Northwest Arkansas as a beacon of hope
for
others. And the others are everyone. It's not just Black. It's not Black folks
because
there ain't that many of us here to begin with. And that was the other thing that I was really amazed by. Were all the different people that I saw coming through the door, and especially during the pandemic when you had that procession of cars,
mm-hmm.
they would pull up and You know, like you would hear news reports about, yeah, people pull up in Escalades and all yes. this and that, and you just don't realize who's going through.
That's right. Food insecurity doesn't have a specific face, a race, a denomination, a creed, a nationality. It does not discriminate.
Yeah.
It can hit anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
And I can tell you a lot of my background in HR rolled over into this food pantry work because coming out of manufacturing, I was a HR manager at a manufacturing facility, and I was trained Kaizen by our owners who were okay. Japanese.
Yeah.
So they trained about removing muda and waste mm-hmm. from your process, sustainability. Kanbans, mm-hmm. first in, first out, not wasting by touching things twice, having a process, everything having a place. And I took a lot of that knowledge from that background of being in manufacturing and just incorporated that into the food pantry. And I was like, I was wondering why I was here and all this, and I was gaining all this knowledge, and I just took it and just transitioned it. So it was great to bring that. And I'm grateful because even in that position, when I was in HR, the one thing I love about the Japanese is they don't send a supervisor or a manager. They actually brought the CEOs, the CEO from Daikin Corporation, which is the largest air filtration manufacturing in the world,
right.
came down, and he's going to hit the floor and show you what you're doing right.
Sure.
And it wasn't just for the manufacturing employees. He wanted everybody in the entire company. He wanted everybody in the office to know Kaizen, to everybody in the office to understand lean management. Like if you needed a pen, nothing needed to be over there. It needs to be right by your hand.
Yeah.
And so taking that and saying, how can I make this process seamless where individuals can come in, shop, get what they need, walk around, shop, and go out, and we can keep going.
Yeah.
The other piece of that is, how can I do that with my extended family? And my extended family is my community.
Yep.
It's brothers and sisters in Christ and in this world, period. And you're right. We open the doors for any and everyone to come in to volunteer. I actually love people. That's part of my passion in HR is loving to know and learn something different about different people. I love people. So you're right. We open the doors for Methodist, Catholic, Baptist, Episcopal, agnostic, Mormons.
Yeah.
It's all of us. I think this is what Jesus wanted us to be anyway. Let me just tell the truth and shame the devil.
Right.
I'm just saying he really wanted us to learn how to live and function together because our common goal is around serving each other around food insecurity.
Yeah.
So everyone that comes in the door with a mind and a heart to do something for someone else other than themselves, it becomes a common bond that brings us together. And like I said, some of the individuals that I meet and that I'm in relationship now, I would have never been in relationship under any other circumstance.
Yeah. No, I love that. I mean, you're preaching to me and speaking to me at the same time because, you know, I got to visually see it.
Yes. Yes.
And it was beautiful. And I have to say, you know, now I understand how orderly that room was where we would assemble and put all
That's
the packages
right.
together. And I'm a huge fan of, because I think that whole Kaizen approach was mm-hmm. was actually developed by Mr. Toyota.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
From Toyota Motor Cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taught in business schools.
Yes.
MBA programs all talk about Kaizen. It's just mm-hmm. that whole idea of consistent improvement.
That's right.
Which is actually along the same lines of, you know, getting 1% better each day, right?
Each
you
day.
Don't, you want to continue to improve. And it's so funny because I was just listening. I've read the autobiography of Sam Walton,
mm-hmm.
and I was reading about how, I mean, like, he was on a whole nother level. He was, like, on the ground, boots on
yep,
the ground.
He was.
He gave new meaning. Matter of fact, under the dictionary where it says boots on the ground, it's a picture of Sam Walton because all the stories tell about how he would literally, and that's why he got a pilot's license, because he would fly into a store and be there on the ground when that store opened, would walk around, talk to people,
mm-hmm.
find out what they needed, what they wanted,
That's
what
right.
they were learning, how they were doing things. That's how Walmart, you know, became a store that monopolized
mm-hmm.
the retail marketplace.
That's true.
Because he was on the ground at all times. He wasn't sitting in some CEO
office
tower somewhere.
Right.
He was there in the midst of it all,
right.
which I thought was really powerful. And just to hear what you were saying about your former boss coming over from Japan
mm-hmm.
to kind of inspect. And there's
yes.
nothing like having the head person come in to inspect things
and teach. He was a trainer.
Yeah.
He just put on regular clothes. He didn't want to walk around in a suit because I've seen the upper echelon of the Japanese leaders come in and had a lady fanning her. And he had somebody bringing him coffee and she was like, more tea, sir, more tea, sir. She was like, they have to have these clean towels around everything there. And so I've seen that side, but he was like, that's not what I want.
Right.
What I want is to watch their process, see where it could be improved, and we could be more efficient.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I kind of even model after that because in the role that I have in the food pantry now, I can do any and everybody's job. And that's my, I'm like you, I'm boots on the ground and I can be here packing food boxes. I clean the restrooms. I can check somebody in outside because I want you to know that I will do whatever I need to do to support you in your walk alongside me because you're here volunteering.
Yeah.
And what support do you, I always, my question is, how can I support you in what you're doing? And if you say, hey, I need some extra ink pens, well, I'll go to Office Depot so we can get, we need some new trash bags. How can I support you in your role in volunteering so this could be easier for you? So individuals tend to come back because they feel like they feel supported, they feel seen, and they also have a voice.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they go, you know, this isn't working right here. Maybe we can try. And guess what? I'm listening because I'm open to say maybe it could work better.
Yeah.
And maybe you know something that I don't know. I don't know all of your background because what I find is I have retired principals, I have retired doctors, I have retired dentists, I have surgeons, I have people that are on parole or probation. They're trying to volunteer and get their hours. You don't know what skills, knowledge, skill, and ability that's just around you until you tap into them. And what I find is allowing people to work within their strength strengthens our whole operations of the food pantry.
Yeah. And I mean, you everything that you just said is kind of a masterclass on servant leadership, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you think of it, some leading from behind,
when
you give people the space to kind of do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you have some guidelines, but it's like, okay, well, and if somebody has a better idea, let's incorporate
That's right. Let's incorporate it. Let's try it until, like you said, let's try it until we master it and we can incorporate it for everybody to start doing it.
Yeah. So tell me, obviously the pandemic just, it created a whole different paradigm for us when it came to dealing with the food insecure. But what was the one thing that continued to give you hope on a daily basis as you fed so many families over the 3+ years of the pandemic?
I can tell you one thing that was huge for me that gave me hope is collaborating with service employees from the Fayetteville Police Department to the Washington County Sheriff's Department to firefighters and police in other cities within Washington County.
Sure.
So we serve Washington, Madison, Carroll, and Benton County. But I could call any public service provider and said, hey, you're in Prairie Grove. I have 20 ladies here. They're all 70 plus, picking up 50-pound boxes. When they get there, is there any way you can meet them to help them deliver these boxes? Because we help them get them in, but it would be nice if you could step up and help them get them out. So engaging our public service officers, because even during the pandemic, we, of course, had the whole, we had a racial pandemic too. We had a racial rising. And what I wanted to talk about was, what does community policing really look like?
Yeah, yeah.
And initially, I know there was some conversation around that the police were there for show and photos. 3 years later, the police and the sheriffs are still serving right alongside.
Yeah.
And not just for me, they get to know their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
They know that community better because they've been delivering food there for 3 years.
Yeah.
Fayetteville police have moved to doing it every 2 week. But once again, they get to know their neighbors. And the community gets to see the police as regular people that are coming in, just supporting them. Not coming in to knock on their door, to arrest somebody, to break up families. They get to see them serving in a public space where they're delivering and bringing hope as well.
Yeah. And that's really what it should be. I mean, when you think about like a beat cop back in the day, like,
oh, yeah,
you know, a beat cop would walk a neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah.
So they would know everybody in the neighborhood.
That's
now,
right.
You know, because of cars and everything else, that's not as prevalent. So this actually gives, especially those that serve the community, the first responders, it gives them a chance to reconnect with the community that they serve so well in that way.
You
know,
right.
And I think that's special.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I love hearing stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Now that we've come out of the pandemic, what are you seeing when it comes to food insecurity here in Northwest Arkansas? And what are the biggest needs that those of our listeners that are listening should be aware of? And maybe we can figure out some ways to help out.
Right. It's some of us still haven't come out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's something I need everybody to know. Everybody can't pull themselves up by their bootstraps and get back to what it was before. Some people lost their families. They lost their spouses. They lost their breadwinners of their home, and they lost their children. People are still suffering in silence with loneliness, with grief. People are still suffering with
long COVID.
Long COVID.
Yeah, that's a
long COVID. Still having medical issues from this pandemic and medical bills. We're talking about it actually took some people down to the bottom of the barrel, that they had to use all their savings, and there was no unemployment in there. Because unemployment ran out at some time.
Sure.
We had this whole, like, we're going to depend on unemployment and depend on the government. That's gone. What do people do now suffering from food insecurity? So right now, the St. James Food Pantry is saying, how do we now teach our community how to fish? And what we've developed is every second Friday of the month between 10 to noon, we will actually sit down with community members and help them apply for SNAP benefits.
Okay.
Because what we are is we are a supplement. Can I feed a family for six for a week or two? No, I can't. But I could supplement some things and help you make sure that you're not going without eating at all. One thing that I noticed when I first started doing this work is some food pantries, you can't come to them once every 30 days. Some once every 60 days. Some once every 90 days. How do you feed your family? We go to the grocery store every week. I don't know
exactly.
About you.
Yeah, multiple times. I got three boys at home, so they eat like ravenous wolves. So yeah.
That's one thing that I said to myself, how would I feed my family? How would I take care of my family? I would go to the grocery store once a week. So the rules were aligned with what I would want for my own family to say that everybody can come at least once a week, every week, and get any type of food that you need. And we work with some individuals that have some allergy issues.
Right.
We have a lot of refugees and immigrant students. And we work with individuals that say, I don't eat canned goods.
Right.
I don't eat pork.
Yeah.
It's Ramadan. Like we have to be aware that if we want to serve people well, what could we do differently?
Sure.
And so one is staying the boots on the ground. One is creating relationships with Canopy and with the university and the Marshallese, the MEI and ACOM and Ozark Atolls, creating relationships with my Hispanic community, even AID, Stephen Colger, who is now Leo, working with AID and the Hispanic population to say, what does support look like to you? And that takes away from enabling, and it's actually becomes supportive. Because if you tell me I need masa and not flour, then I'm being supportive. I'm not giving you what I think you should be having.
Yeah, and I think that's different too, right? And that remains a subtlety that sometimes goes missed when we're trying to serve the needs of those that are less fortunate.
That's right.
A lot of times, through no fault of our own, we just think, oh, well, we're gonna throw this elephant on this thing and that'll solve the problem. But it's like, man, they don't like a gray elephant. They want a brown elephant. And that brown elephant needs to be this size.
That's
and,
true.
You know, you have to kind of think about what you were, how you were serving other people. Because if you're going to serve them, you might as well go all the way.
My husband and I were sponsors to a resettling family during the pandemic that had been in a refugee camp for 21 years. And I bought them their first box from the food pantry. And there were some leg quarters. And she said, what is this? And I said, chicken. She goes, no, we're used to a chicken with the feathers. And I said, this is chicken. She said, no, thank you. We are used to processed, cut up, deep, you know, feathers off it.
Yeah.
She was like, no, thank you. I prefer not to have that because I'm not sure what that is. So that's not serving well. She tells me, but also what I found in working with refugees is as a community, as Americans, we are so trained to forced integration.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you do what we do over here in America.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the best for everyone. If they have been eating naturally from the land for years and you wanted them to take some canned goods, it's probably not going to happen.
Right.
And guess what? I'm not going to make you take it. tell me what serves you well. Do you need some lentils? Do you need pinto beans? Do you need just dry beans? Do you just want beef? Do you just want, now, can I give you fresh chicken to take the feathers? I probably won't be able to get you that.
Right.
But what I can do is get you some seedlings to start your own garden.
Yeah.
And help support you in that walk in order to eat fresh and eat better to make sure you're still doing what you need to do for sustainability for your own family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I mean, and you know, all that boils down to is people being seen.
That's right.
And I think all of us,
yes,
from the richest person to the poorest person, we all want to be seen.
That's right.
You know, and
acknowledge. And have a voice and allow them. We complain like, I don't understand what she's saying. This is why you have Google Translate.
Right.
Just translate and be patient with it.
Yeah.
Because the same way you're patient with your family, you want to be patient with your extended family.
Sure. Absolutely. So what are you, I mean, given these years of experience that you have under your belt now, mm-hmm, with St. James Food Pantry, mm-hmm, what are you most hopeful for the future?
I've had some visions, and my visions are to tackle food insecurity into the rural areas around Northwest, mm-hmm, Arkansas.
Those needs aren't being met out there.
That's right.
There.
And they're driving in to get food, but we're also delivering. So just like you said, during the pandemic, we went out and delivered food. We still deliver about 350 boxes from Fayetteville, Springdale, West Fork, Winslow, Lincoln, Prairie Grove, almost to the Oklahoma border. And I meet people every single day that goes, I'm in Prairie Grove. How can I get connected to your pantry? And I have this barrier called transportation.
Yeah.
We don't have mass transit in.
No, not yet.
That's a whole nother discussion. Don't get me started. Let me get back on track. So, but the one thing that I love is I love my community members that are willing to come every week. Some of the individuals that have been volunteering since the Rotary came are still there driving, will come and pick up food and drive 20 to 15 miles to take a food box to individuals that they know are homebound, do not have family, do not have access to transportation. And they 100% depend on the food that's coming from our food pantry to eat every week.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. You know, and I always say that, you know, when you create or have a need, there are people to fulfill it.
That's right.
You just have to open your mouth. You just have to let folks know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how many people will step up and say, hey, here I am.
Not only will they step up, they will tell their neighbors, who will tell someone else. Because I started initially recruiting in some of those faith-based spaces. But I also, with my HR background, started thinking, what does the Census Bureau say I have available to me around me?
Yeah.
And how can I tap into everything around me? I'm not going to put myself in a box to say that I can't tap into the Episcopal Church and LDS. And so the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints has been one of our biggest partners in this work towards tackling food insecurity. They have bought, I can say, I know off the top of my head, 9 truckloads of food from Utah.
Okay.
And that's 21 pallets.
Yeah. That's a lot of food.
To Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yes. To people that have no idea who I'm going to serve it to, but I make sure that we're getting it out and serving everyone in the community.
Oh, man. That to me is like the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing.
That's right.
And it's nice, right? I mean, you kind of want to see that. And sometimes I think that's important because a lot of times people think that when you give, there must be an agenda made it to that giving.
That's right. Because originally when I met the state president, Alan Galdon, you know, you think this is during this time that we have this racial uprising. That he's saying, well, we're going to help a black church. Check, it's done. No, it was an actual relationship built between myself and him in order to bring us together closer and saying, how can we support each other?
Yeah.
And so I've been over to his house for Thanksgiving dinner and 4th of July. He's been over my house. He's come and volunteers. They've offered grants and saying, how can we help you with your capacity? How can we help you get a new freezer, a new refrigerator? And to me, that's building community too, because you're building with a community that does not have a space in the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day. There's not a African-American church in that space, but he can at least build a partnership and community with us to say, I could still support, and you don't necessarily need to be a member of our church as well.
Yeah. No, I love that. I mean, and that's really how it should be.
Yeah.
It's not always like that, but
that's correct.
That is certainly how it should be. So Man, I mean, you're doing so much. If people that are listening to this are really moved by hearing your story and what you're sharing, what are ways that they can give back to you and to your efforts with the St. James Food Pantry specifically?
Well, St. James started a nonprofit arm, which is called the Squire Hagen Outreach Center. And so the food pantry falls under the arm of the Squire Hagen Outreach Center. So our website is squirecenter.com.
Okay.
You can always go to the website squirecenter.com and donate. You can also sign up to volunteer. We're open 5 days a week and we take volunteers 5 days a week. Recently, we've been partnering with the university to tackle food insecurity around graduate students.
Yeah.
And so we have right now we have the first food storage locker in the state of Arkansas, where you can pick up food, order food, client choice, 24 hours a day and pick it up 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that. So that has come to fruition.
Come to fruition. We have the first one, but I think it's the first of many to come.
Yeah.
But that's going to take supportive services from the community. It's going to take some grants. It's going to take some donations. But we can happen. It can happen. The current one right now is on the east side of Fayetteville. My next vision is on the west side. And then maybe we go out to Greenland and Winslow.
Or in some of those rural areas that you're talking about.
Rural areas.
Well, I mean, give me an idea just from a monetary standpoint. What does it cost to put a food locker someplace? Because that's different than some of these food pantries that we see
definitely.
Around the community.
The full cost was about $150,000.
Okay.
So number one, the locker itself was anywhere from $50,000 to $60,000. I had to put in a 5-cat, which is hardwire. Wi-Fi, so I don't have to worry about Wi-Fi going down. Updated some electrical. I put in a concrete pad to make sure it was balanced. And then the next thing is getting the food in order to staff the orders.
Sure.
So you build it, they will come, but you're still going to need some food to put in.
Exactly. Exactly. So do you think if you had two or three more of those, you could get food for those?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
And my goal is to work with more farmers around for natural, to glean in the fields and bring fresh produce, fresh vegetables, and even work with our local Tyson's and George's on protein.
Yeah.
Because I think it can happen. We need to come together and say, how do we support what's happening? It's not for Monique. Let me just raise my hand. It's for everybody surrounding me. It's for our community. It's for our community members. The other thing that we're doing is we're partnering with United Way on a grant from Walmart is DoorDash and delivering food to individuals that are homebound. And that need is getting greater. We've been doing it. This is our second year.
Okay.
The second year.
I had no idea.
Every Thursday, individuals go online, they place orders, and then DoorDash comes and picks it up and drops it right at their door. And it's for individuals that are truly disabled and homebound.
Yeah.
And so I work with some renal clinics. I work with Hope Cancer Resource. And I work with community clinic to make sure that they can identify individuals that need a food delivery and we get them to.
Of which there are probably many.
That's right.
Yeah.
Many, because I've had requests for many more. And I'm always thinking bigger and better. How do I help this grow? And then what's a sustainability plan to keep this in place to serve our community?
Yeah, I love that. Well, you know, it's so funny as I'm sitting here listening to everything that you're saying. If there was ever a spokesperson for the whole comment that it takes a village.
Yeah.
Monique Jones, you would be that spokesperson for that idea of it takes a village.
Yeah. It does take a
village. No, I mean, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are definitely doing God's work.
And so I
certainly, you know, want to continue to affirm the time and effort that you put into this. Because I even know that I'm sure at times that, you know, your family's like, hey, what's going on? We're over here. I know. Because, you know, that's always our first ministry.
That is
our family.
My family is my first ministry.
But you certainly have a heart to serve the community. And you are doing it at a high level and doing it well and doing it in a way where you are causing other people to take notice and say, hey, I want to model what I want to do after what you're doing.
That is correct. And my doors are always open to any food pantry. I had a food pantry come down from Siloam, and she said, I'm struggling with processes. And I said, you're welcome. Come in and volunteer for
the day. Came to the right place.
Came to the right place. Take pictures, take film, ask questions. I'll come out and help consult because I want you to win too.
Yeah.
I want us all to win.
Yeah.
Because if we win, our community wins.
Yep.
Somebody's life is saved. I'm telling you, my worst story was during the pandemic that I did get a call from one of the clinics that said they had somebody in there that was malnutrition, and he was working, but he had just enough to pay the bills. And it was him and his mom, and they were sharing a piece of bread every day. One piece of bread to stay alive, but he had enough money to pay all his bills. And I thought, how sad is that? So what we did was fill up his whole pantry and remind him you can come once a week every week.
Yeah.
We're going to fill your pantry up the first time to make sure you have something that's sustainable, but at the same time, come back every week and get what you need. And I thought, how is this happening in my backyard?
In one of the richest countries in the world.
That's right.
That was the thing my grandfather would always say. I don't know how this thing happens in one of the richest countries in the world. He said it was our biggest challenge as Americans to allow people to go to bed hungry at night.
That's correct.
Like fundamentally. I mean, of course, around the world, we get that. But here in the United States, the richest country in the world, and people are still going to bed hungry at night.
I work with an organization called Bread for the World, and they do food advocacy around domestic and international.
Yeah.
And I went to D.C. last year, and I knocked on the door of Tom Cotton, and I knocked on the door of my representative, and I actually spoke with Boozman, and we talked about it because he is the head of the Ag Committee. And that's the one thing I can say is he understands that this is a bigger problem than just Arkansas. But in the space that he has power to change, he really wants the Ag Committee to see that if we lost access to food, to SNAP, to WIC, that there are going to be several people that go without eating. We're talking about our veterans. We're talking about our seniors. We're talking about people with disabilities.
Yeah.
And then you get down to mothers and families. People hear food stamps or they hear WIC and they think, oh, it's the mother with all the kids. You just hit four other different type of populations that you didn't even understand. And so all these legislators that's voting against the farm bill, they'll feel it when their grandmother loses her SNAP.
Sure.
Or their uncle, who's a veteran, loses his SNAP. They don't realize how many people it affects. And it affects this whole world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It really is. I mean, we have a ways to go in this country from a legislative standpoint when it comes to food insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more that can be done. I think with more Monique Jones out there, we will certainly combat that as much as possible, and we will see and be able to experience some level of success. So,
well, I'm going to tell you, part of my success is this week I have seven of my grandkids with me.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for Sanaya Abney, Micaiah Abney, Mackenzie Smith. I'm grateful that they get to see me serve, and they know that that's their reasonable service is to give back. And my thing is for them to be mentored and know that they could do the same exact thing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think it's great. When I walked in and saw you with the whole crew that you had, I said, oh, man. But, you know, I almost threatened that. I said I was going to put them all on the podcast, but it's all good. They're just they're sitting here listening. But, you know, I always tell people, especially people with young kids, more is caught than taught. You know, if you witness things happening,
That's right.
I witnessed stuff my grandfather did that, you know, spoke volumes into my life more so than any sermon ever could or any word of encouragement. I just witnessed it. And because I witnessed it, it became part of me.
It was the same for me. My great grandfather was my next door neighbor, and he was a giver and he was a server and he loved people. And I saw him. I saw my great grandmother make his lunch every day. And she would ask him when he came in, Eddie D, did you eat today? And he said, no, I gave it to a guy I saw on the street. He didn't have any food, but I knew you had something fixed for me, Thelma, when I came in. So I was still going to eat. But she asked him every day, did you eat today? And he said, no, I blessed somebody else with it.
Right.
And so you're right. I saw his heart for people that he knew at end of the day, we had some land and he was going to farm and we were not going to go hungry.
You'll be
but
all
it was
right.
Like I saw somebody else with less than and understanding giving to somebody that can never pay you back is just that's the reasonable thing to do.
Yeah, it is without a doubt. Without a doubt. So I do have one question for you before we close out.
Mm-hmm.
After 12 years, what is your take on Northwest Arkansas?
My take on Northwest Arkansas is there are a lot of people that have heart for the work and they do want to know how they can get connected. The other piece is how they can stay connected and they want to know if they fit. How do I fit in this equation of what you're putting? But I think you just also they also have to step out on faith because some people, and I'm just going to be just transparent, I've never worked with a Black woman before, and a Black woman that's barking orders or that's leading a team and she's the leader out front and understanding that we're all people and we're all people with great ideas. We were born brilliant in His image. The only thing that keeps us from being brilliant is our hurts and our hangups that we've been taught or we've been through that we need to let go and leave somewhere and come with our whole selves, with our heart and saying, what can I do? What can I contribute? And I love that every space that I go in, that there are people in this community that have a heart to say, how can I help?
Yeah.
What can I do? How can I give?
You know, I'm telling you, people think I joke about this or that my observation of what you just said is maybe less than accurate because it can't be like that, right? You know, you hear that. And like I said, I lived on both coasts. I lived out in Europe. I mean, I've been all over the place, grew up right outside of New York City. And you know, every place is different.
Yes.
There's something special about Northwest Arkansas. I can't always put my finger on it, but you have kind of captured the essence of what it is about. And I really do see people, the refrain, how can I help, is constantly there.
Yeah.
And so I know anybody listening to this that's thinking about moving here, you know, this is the kind of place that you're thinking about coming to. It's not just the home space of Walmart or J.B. Hunt or Tyson.
That's right. That's right.
That's a benefit. That's a byproduct of it.
It's a byproduct of it.
Northwest Arkansas, and there's a reason why they kind of call it the heartland, you know, because the heart emanates from that.
That's
and
true.
And so, you
that's
know, I think there, you know, when I always think of symbolism and I think of that, there's something very special about that. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to really take a closer look at Northwest Arkansas and why it is so special. And the reason why I think it's so special is because of individuals like Monique Jones.
Oh, so, thank you, Randy. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. Not a problem. So once again, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do it?
My email address is outreach at stjb, as in boy, c as in cat, .org.
Okay, there we go.
I can also give out our food pantry number is 479-332-5161. We are open on Tuesdays from 9 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. and on Thursdays from 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. And I'd love to create more partnerships with the farmers market, the farmers, with grocers, with just community that says we want to do a canned food drive.
Yeah.
And if somebody's out there and they want to work with me to support this type of work, just reach out and I'll be glad to work with you.
Yeah. And I would encourage anybody listening to this, if you want to even just sponsor your time with Monique and her team, reach out to them at outreach at stjbc.org or call 479-332-5161 and inquire how you can help.
That's cool.
And then also, if you if you've got some extra cash just laying around and you want to build a food locker with Monique, I think she could probably do it for you pretty quickly.
We can get it done.
Yes. And I'd love to see that. We'd love to see food lockers out in Madison County and going out towards Harrison and Mountain Home and some of those areas.
It.
I mean, because again, you don't, you know, we think about Northwest Arkansas and, you know, we look around this area and we're like, oh, everybody's got everything figured out. But you, all you got to do is throw a rock about 15 miles outside of the city center. And it's a whole different story.
It's a whole different story. One, my last dream I want to tell you about is a reefer truck. Because going into those areas, anytime you're transporting food over 30 minutes, it needs to be in a refrigerated truck. That's something I don't have. But if I can get access to a reefer truck, we could go out and do more in the rural areas. Because I want, number one, to be safe with transporting food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, when you said reefer truck, I was thinking like, and I know somebody listening just was like, did she say what I think she said? But she said
refrigerated truck.
A refrigerated truck. Let's qualify that. Okay, so Monique needs a refrigerated truck. She needs folks to come and volunteer at the St. James Food Pantry. And she needs additional donations just to help her continue to move this thing forward, especially for food lockers and food insecure areas. So I'm putting it out there in the world. If somebody hears this podcast and says, you know what? I've got some extra ducats laying around I want to bless Monique and what she is doing and how she's continuing to improve this community. Please reach out to her and let her know that you heard about it first here on the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. So Monique and your granddaughters, I really appreciate you guys coming out today and just continue to do what you're doing and know that I'm always praying for you and supporting anything that you do. Anything you put your hand to, I'm there to support. So
thank you, Randy.
Just call me anytime.
I appreciate it. I love you. Just like I love Chris, I love you both.
I take that. I appreciate that. So thank you so much, Monique Jones. Well, folks, that's another episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. To learn more about us or to read or download the show notes from today's episode, visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. You can listen to this podcast and sign up for our free newsletter to keep up with us and all things NWA. Sign up today. You can follow the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast wherever you listen to it. And please, please, please consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. Remember, our podcast comes out every Monday, rain or shine. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and we'll see you back here next week for another new episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. And I promise you, we are going to employ the Kaizen method of continuous improvement with our podcast in the same way that Monique is doing that, serving the food insecure here in Northwest Arkansas. I'm Randy Wilburn, and I'll talk to you soon. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit IamNorthwestArkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.